ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, Text 13, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Evam tri vrit ahankaraha bhuta indriya manaha mayahi sva abhasaihi Lakshitah anena sat abhasena satyadrik evam trivridahankaro bhutendriya manomayahi svabhasair lakshito nena Sad abhasena satyadrik evam trivrid ahankaro bhutendriya manomayahi svabhasair lakshito nena sad abhasena satyadrik So. Evam trivridahankaro bhutendriya manomayahi svabhasair lakshito nena sadabhasena satyadrik Evam trividahankaro putendriyo manomayahi svabhasair lakshito nena svabhasena satyadrik Evam trividahankaro putendriyo manomayahi Svabhavaya lakshito nena Satabhasena satyadrik Nivam trividahankaro Putendriya mano mayahi Svabhasaya lakshito nena Satabhasena satyadrik Ladies, please. Evam trividahankaro bhutendriya manomayahi svabhasai lakshito nena sadabhasena satyadrik Evam trividahankaro Putendriya manomayihi Svabhasaya lakshito nena Sadabhasena satyadrik Evam trividahankaro Putendriya manomayihi Svabhasaya lakshito nena Svadabhasena satyadrik Evam thus tri vrit the threefold ahankaraha false ego bhuta, indriya, manaha, mayahi, consisting of body, senses and mind. Sva, abhasaihi, by its own reflections. Lakshitaha is revealed. Anena, by this. Sat, abhasena, by a reflection of Brahman. Satya, drik, the self-realized soul. The self-realized soul is thus reflected first in the threefold ego and then in the body, senses, and mind. Purport. The conditioned soul thinks, I am this body. But a liberated soul thinks, I am not this body. I am spirit soul. This I am is called ego or identification of the self. I am this body, or everything in relation to the body is mine, is called false ego. But when one is self-realized and thinks that he is an eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, that identification is real ego. One conception is in the darkness of the threefold qualities of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. And the other is in the pure state of goodness called Shuddhasattva or Vasudeva. When we say that we give up our ego, this means that we give up our false ego, but real ego is always present. When one is reflected through the material contamination of the body and mind in false identification, he is in the conditional state. But when he is reflected in the pure stage, he is called liberated. The identification of oneself with one's material possessions in the conditional stage must be purified, and one must identify himself in relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the conditioned state, one accepts everything as an object of sense gratification, and in the liberated state, one accepts everything for the service of the Supreme Lord. Krishna consciousness, devotional service, is the actual liberated stage of a living entity. Otherwise, both accepting and rejecting on the material platform, or in voidness, or impersonalism, are imperfect conditions for the pure soul. By the understanding of the pure soul, called Satya Drik, one can see everything as a reflection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A concrete example can be given in this connection. A conditioned soul sees a very beautiful rose and he thinks that the nice aromatic flower should be used for his own sense gratification. This is one kind of vision. A liberated soul, however, sees the same flower as a reflection of the Supreme Lord. He thinks this beautiful flower is made possible by the superior energy of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it belongs to the Supreme Lord and should be utilized in his service. These are two kinds of vision. The conditioned soul sees the flower for his own enjoyment, and the devotee sees the flower as an object to be used in the service of the Lord. In the same way, one can see the reflection of the Supreme Lord in one's own senses, mind, and body, in everything. With that correct view, one can engage everything in the service of the Lord. It is stated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one who has engaged everything, his vital energy, his wealth, his intelligence, and his words, in the service of the Lord, or who desires to engage all these in the service of the Lord, no matter how he is situated, is to be considered a liberated soul or satyadrik. Such a man has understood things as they are. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Shrishtam Anumapi Shatiputramatra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupurim Maturim Goshtavartim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tam Natosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagraja Tam Sahagarna Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parajana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Subtle, complex discussions of psychology, Sankhya philosophy, Vedanta philosophy, Srila Prabhupada has made it so easy to understand. It's an extraordinary gift. There's such topics, the nature of the self, the nature of ego, the nature of liberation, these are topics discussed for centuries among highly learned and intelligent people, especially in India. And Srila Prabhupada has made it very clear for persons without any background of Vedic culture, has made it very clear for everyone to understand what is the self, what is false egoism, what is real egoism, and what is liberation. Egoism, this is not a good term even among materialists. It's not appreciated if someone is proud, and especially if they are assertively proud of their qualifications and position, real or imagined. On the other hand, it could be thought, well, you have to be a little egoistic, otherwise you get pushed around too much. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, Trinadapi Sunichena Torori Vasihishnuna Amanina Amanadena Kirtaneya Sadaharihi. It's probably the best known verse among the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's not difficult to recite it, but at least to me, it seems to be one of the most difficult to follow. Easy to say, difficult to follow. How can we be so humble? We don't seem to have any difficulty in understanding how it's easy to be egoistic. We practically expect it in someone who's got some position, a powerful person. It's practically expected that they will be egoistic. And we see, even if someone has a petty position, but a position nevertheless, they tend to become egoistic and assert their authority, however little it may be. And this is seen in clerks, on persons in petty administrative positions all over the world, pretty much. Someone who's in a low position, but they have some authority, they often like to make it difficult for whoever comes within their clutches. It can be someone like an immigration officer or someone who has to sign something, some local official, and they just make a big thing out of it to make it known how important they are, although they're not very important, but they like to think they're important. Even one devotee told me yesterday, her perception, that whenever, well, not in all cases, I presume, but she sees when devotees get initiated, then they start saying, "See, oh, I'm initiated." They become egoistic. And they, well, if that happens, then better not to be initiated, because you're going backwards. Initiation is supposed to be entrance onto the autobahn. Stop driving on the side roads and get on the fast track. Yeah. But if it makes us more egoistic, or actually it doesn't make us egoistic, it's our response to it. There's a saying that power corrupts, but it's not necessarily true. Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But it's not necessarily true. It's only if the heart is already corrupt, then the corruption comes out. There's an opportunity for it to manifest. But in a saintly person, they can be powerful and not proud at the same time. We see Srila Prabhupada. He was spotless Paramahamsa. But yeah, he was spotless Paramahamsa. He was the leader of thousands of devotees who were surrendered to him and ready to do whatever he said. But he was not proud. He was a perfect, spotless Paramahamsa. It might have appeared to some persons who didn't recognize Srila Prabhupada's position that he was egoistic. So many of his godbrothers didn't like that Srila Prabhupada's disciples called him Srila Prabhupada. They thought it was too much. You can't do that. That's reserved for our own spiritual master. Although he never said that it should be reserved only for him. And Shastra, Hari Bhakti Vilas, says that such titles should be used for spiritual masters. So theoretically, any one of you could also be Prabhupada. Actually, that title, it refers to one who is at the lotus feet of the Lord, so one who's attained to the position of pure devotion. They can be understood to be Prabhupada. They might not officially have that title, but they can understand it, be understood. That's what it means to be a pure devotee. And especially if they also have devotees at their feet, then it becomes a suitable title. Whether or not it should be bestowed within the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to others in future, the question hasn't arisen yet. In fact, it's discouraged that any such titles be awarded for gurus within ISKCON, although, as I say, Hari Bhakti Vilas states that they can be or should be addressed with such terms. Anyway, that's just an example of. Yeah, it might have seen that Srila, it might have been thought, some people might have thought that Srila Prabhupada was very proud. There are so many examples. People in the Western world, they couldn't relate to Srila Prabhupada's position as a guru. One middle-aged woman in Seattle, I believe it was, said, "Oh, they're bowing down to you. They're worshipping you." Prabhupada said, "Yeah, just as I worship my guru." For Prabhupada, it's just a natural, normal thing. For anyone raised in that culture, it's just the natural, normal thing. Children are taught from a young age, before they're able to think or even walk, to bow down. Parents will bring the child and forcibly put his head on the ground. He doesn't know what he's doing, but for him it becomes completely natural to bow down when a saintly person comes, to bow down to the form of the Lord in the temple. Of course, not everyone in India gets that training. The Muslims, they don't like that at all. For them, it's blasphemous. They see it as blasphemous, because you should only bow to Allah, to to no one else, not even to Muhammad. No one else should be worshipped. But we follow the Vedic culture with perfect understanding of what is what and how to act. So, it might seem egoistic even to take the role of a guru. Once I was at Sri Sailam, which is a holy place dedicated to Lord Shiva in South India, in Andhra Pradesh. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also visited there. Tirupati is sometimes also called Sri Sailam, and not nowadays, but it used to be. An auspicious hill is simply what it means. One Mayavadi sannyasi came in, carried on a palanquin with all villagers chanting and dancing around him, and sitting on the palanquin, and just, to me it looked like he was just emanating egoism. Just sitting there. I don't know how to imitate his look. I still remember it. This was so many, more than 30 years ago probably. And what do you expect if someone thinks he's God? Dandagrahena matrena naro narayano bhavit. The Mayavad. Well, one of the Mayavadis' misconceptions, that simply by accepting a sannyasi's rod, a man becomes Narayana. Something wrong with that philosophy. Something seriously wrong. The Mayavadis, they say that you have to be free from ego. The whole thing is you're supposed to be from ego. We don't say that. But we say that you should be free from false ego. Because ego, as Srila Prabhupada has explained here, it simply means the sense of I am. Ahankara. Literally, aham, I, kar, that which makes I. So ahankar is the sense, or what it is that makes our sense of self-identification. Ahamta is another term. Abhiman is another term which is used similarly. Ahankar is the common word, most common word in this connection. But the idea that we should be completely free from ego, no ego, nothing left. That's the Buddhist idea. There's nothing left. There's nothing there anyway, according to some Buddhist teachings. It's not. There's no monolithic body of philosophical understanding in Buddhism, but common school of thought in Buddhism says that there's nothing really, there's nothing there, but we, who don't really exist because we're also nothing, we identify with our situation, and when we stop identifying with it, then nirvana, blow it out. The candle is blown out, and there's nothing left. Which isn't a very good example, because the candle is still there even if the flame isn't. It only pertains to the flame, and the air is still there. The possibility of a flame to be relit is also there. So it's a pretty crude example. So that's their idea. And the Mayavadis have a similar idea, that when you stop identifying with everything and realize that it's all one, and particularly you are one, you are, all jivas are one, but some jivas are more one than others, something like this, then you become God, and God is all one, and no ego. No egoism left. But it's impossible to live in this world without ego, without a sense of identifying with it in some way or other. If we want to be completely egoless in the sense that the Mayavadis understand, then we simply shouldn't do anything. Just don't do anything. Don't eat. Why do you eat? Because you identify with the body. You think the body is yourself. So then you eat to me because you feel hunger and you think I'm the body. But if you think I'm not the body, then why need to eat? And then why breathe for that matter? That becomes more difficult. Why breathe? Well, you can't stop, can you? Well, you can try and stop. Breathe in, rechak, hold it. How long can you hold it? Then you have to breathe out at some point. And that should lead us to understand that, okay, I'm not the body, but I'm not in control of the body either. I'm forced to breathe. If I try to stop to do everything, I can't stop. And I can't stop the wind blowing in my face. I can't stop the sun rising or make it rise, although some foolish Mayavadis, it was quite common during the 60s and 70s hippie era that a hippie would go to a hillside and with the assistance of some psychotropic drug would imagine when the sun is rising that he's making the sun rise, although it's rising anyway, without whether he's there or not, or whether he thinks he's making it rise or not. That is false ego gone completely insane. But what is real ego? To understand that I am a discrete living being and my eternal situation is an eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord. Jiva Sarup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. This is proper understanding. Not that I ever cease to exist. Mamai Vangsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatanaha. These two lines from Bhagavad Gita should be enough to completely torpedo the Mayavad conception that the jiva becomes Shiva. That's one of their slogans. You become God. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that the jivas are my parts eternally. Jiva bhuta sanatanaha. They're eternally his parts. Which means that even after liberation, the jiva remains separate from the Supreme Lord. So the Mayavadis say you have to be free from ego. Then you can be then you're liberated. With the idea that when there's no liberation, then there's no sense of I am. And then there's no more bondage in this material world, because bondage comes from a sense of identification with it. It might sound like a cogent philosophy until you start to dig a little deep, poke it, and see that, yes, in material existence, whatever situation we get as a human, as a dog, as a cat, as a butterfly, as a tree, whatever, we identify with that situation and with everything in relation to that situation. And that in this way, egoism is manifested in this world. But at the same time, if we think, if I stop identifying with all of these things, then I'll be liberated. But I will be liberated. The very thought, I will be liberated, shows that we can't stop thinking in terms of I. We're intrinsically I. We have that. So false ego, this term is used, false ego, false identification with everything in this world and the designations that come with this world. Or a particular situation in this world. For instance, I am German. I am 24 years old. My name is Boris Schmidt. I live in Nuremberg. I am a garbage disposal, or whatever the euphemistic term, garbage disposal officer. And this is my wife, and we have one little Schmidt so far, and maybe more will come. And in this way, we identify with our whole situation. But that's false, because it's not eternal. In the next life, we'll be in another situation. So that is false identification. It's not my constitutional position. I exist eternally. But when I think, I and this body and everything in relation to the I identify myself. I build my identity based on everything around me. Then that becomes false egoism. And it's very important to everyone. Everyone in this world, their identity, it's essential to everyone. How we dress is a reflection of how we want to present ourselves to the world, what we want others to think of, how we identify. The different modes of dress as a punk rocker or a skinhead, well, that includes hairstyle, or a normal, respectable German citizen. The way we dress, the way we conduct ourselves, even the tone of voice we adopt, that indicates how we want others to understand us at that particular moment. So we may speak in affectionate tones, in reprimanding tones, and in this way we build our identity. And in the Western world, particularly at the present time, it's commonly heard that people have an identity crisis. Young people, I don't want all these labels. If I look at all these labels that people have made, I don't want to fit into any of them. Who am I really? They want to, or build your personality, personality development. Develop your personality. Speak with confidence. And you have to walk with confidence. And in this way, you can be a commanding personality. We see quite often these commanding personalities, they have nervous breakdowns because they're just maintaining a persona, and inside they feel very fragile. Their outside show doesn't match what they are inside. And this is called conditioning. We're conditioned by society, we're conditioned by how we choose our conditioning to some extent, and we become very attached to it, so much so that people are willing to die for their country. Our country is so important that I'll sacrifice my life for this country. Self-sacrifice, it's considered the highest, the pinnacle of human existence, to sacrifice your life for others or for the country. But it's all nonsense. People would be very upset if you say that. Just recently I was in a city in southern England where there was a public garden with a plaque saying how so many soldiers from this area of England had sacrificed their lives in one battle in the Second World War, the invasion of Italy. It was tens of thousands of people, tens of thousands of men just from one small area of England. And this is considered, salute. But it's all nonsense. But you can't say that. If you say that, I'm not sure what people in Germany think, because the German psyche post-Second World War has been one of nationalized shame. But in Britain, because we won the war, then it's a sense of pride. And we take pride in all those brave young men who gave their lives. It says that in the inscription. We should remember these brave young men who gave their lives so that we can walk in these peaceful gardens now. But it didn't help anyone. Ultimately, it doesn't help anyone. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire, one of the first teachings of Bhagavad Gita, that there's neither a killer nor the killed. What is the last line of the verse before that? Anyway, Krishna says, one who thinks I am killing or someone else is killed. Ya enam vanti veti hantaram yas chainam manyate hatam ubho to na vijani to nayam hanti na hanyate. Thank you. One who thinks I am killing and someone else is killed, they don't know what they're talking about, because we're only talking about the body. But we're not the body. The implications of understanding I am not the body, how deep does it go? I'm not the body means I don't have anything to do with all the things that are going on around me, and the whole values of the society around me, we can't subscribe to that. It's all illusory, it's all binding, it all props up our ego. I am not this body. This is the beginning of spiritual understanding. And then the ramifications, the implications, they go so deep. But the Mayavadis, they take a wrong turn. I'm not this body, I'm spiritual. But what I am, what I actually am, they go so far as to say that the whole sense of I-ness is completely wrong. As it's manifested in this world, the whole sense of I-ness is what binds us in this material world. But the Vaishnava teaching, which is in accord with it's the actual Vedic teaching, is that I am, to say that is not wrong, but one should know what to say after that. I am not this body. I am an eternal spiritual soul, an eternal servant of Krishna. And it's a manifestation of the Mayavadi's egoism that they don't want to accept that they are eternally servants of Krishna. So they give up the false ego of identifying with this body and this world, but they don't give up the egoism of refusing to submit to Krishna, to understand that they're very small and there is the Supreme. So Vaishnava understanding is perfect. It combines these two things. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchyate. Without any mundane designations, sarvopadi vinirmuktam, being completely spotless, in the sense that if one doesn't identify with this body or this world, then he has nothing to gain from this world. He doesn't see others as objects for his other people or other things as objects for his enjoyment or objects for his exploitation, but he's simply fixed on the Supreme. He engages his senses. The Mayavadis, they think that, well, we don't have any ego, so we don't belong in this world, and therefore all sensual interaction is Maya. But the Vaishnavas know that the senses should be engaged in interacting with this world in the service of Krishna. Krishnarte akila cheshta. It's not that we should give up endeavors and simply do nothing, but we should act for Krishna's sake, what Krishna wants us to do. This is the whole teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna wanted to give up his activities, his prescribed duty, and Krishna said, you do it for me. Everything you do for me. Yad karoshi, yad ashnasi, yad juhoshi, dadasi yad. Yad tapasyasi kaunteya, tat kurushva madarpanam. Whatever you do, Krishna told Arjuna. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you sacrifice, whatever you give in charity, any austerities you perform, do it as an offering to me. This is the Vaishnava system. Not that one completely tries to turn off. The Mayavadis, they want to cultivate the sense of non-existence or non-identification with this world. And for that, they want to live in the state of goodness, sattva-gun. So they can come to the platform of jnana, transcendental knowledge. Sattvam sanjayate jnanam. From living in sattva-gun comes that is conducive for cultivating transcendental knowledge. Because in the mode of passion, it's very much concerned with interacting with the senses for the sake of enjoying. And in the mode of ignorance, there's also maybe not so much interaction with the senses as in the mode of passion, but a sense of hopelessness, no higher thought whatsoever. Vaishnavas, as exemplified by Arjuna, they act in this world for the pleasure of Krishna. Arjuna wanted to become very sattvic and go away from the fight and be a peaceful yogi, but Krishna told him, Ma manusmara yudhyacha, thinking of me, fight. We might also think, coming to a nice place here in the country, Bavaria, we might think, well, this is a nice place. I can sit here peacefully and chant Hare Krishna. You can. But there's a lot of service to do also. Lot of work to do so that we can invite others to come here and peacefully chant Hare Krishna. And when they get to like peacefully chanting Hare Krishna enough, then we shave their head and get them to work. Because working for Krishna is better than being simply peaceful and happy with a sense of Krishna consciousness. It's doing what Krishna wants us to do rather than doing what we want to do, and I'll chant Hare Krishna also. That's good. That's a lot better than being a gross sense enjoyer. And actually, we want to establish a whole society like that in which people can live peacefully, varnashram society, which means designations. Varnashram societies have lots of designations, lots of rules, but at the same time, the whole Varnashram society in Krishna consciousness is meant to facilitate practice of Krishna consciousness, by which we understand Naham Vipro na Chanarapatya Napi Vaisho na Shudro. What's the next line? Naham Varni na Chak Grihapatya Nova Nastya Yativa. Kintu. What is it? Prodyan Gopi Bhatur. I lost it altogether. The pujaris, they know it very well. They say it every day. Kintu Prodyan Akela Paramananda Purnamritabdeya Gopi Bhatu Pada Kamalaya Dasu Dasa Anudasaha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that I don't identify myself as a brahmana. He was born in a brahmana family, at least superficially. Naham vipro, nachanarapa. I'm not a kshatriya, I'm not a vaishya, I'm not a shudra. I'm not a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. He took sannyas to teach everyone that we're not sannyasis, we're not brahmanas, we're not grihasthas, we don't belong to any of these things. But he identifies himself and he teaches himself, he teaches others to identify on the spiritual, eternal, complete, perfect, nectarian platform of being this servant of the servant of the servant. And it could go on and on and on, but the idea is there of Krishna, who is the maintainer of the gopis. So as long as we're in this world, there has to be some interaction with it. And Varnashram society is a structured society. This idea that we all just live peacefully, egalitarianism, and everyone's all nice, and it doesn't work. There has to be some hierarchy. There has to be someone in charge, and which means some others are followers. Systematic organization, but with the clear understanding that someone is in a higher position, someone is in lower position materially, but we're all here to cooperate together to serve Krishna and to understand that we don't intrinsically, we have nothing to do with these designations. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, Varnashram is, at least in the teachings, it's rejected, or at least superficially, it's rejected. But the acharyas have explained that it's the sense of identification with Varnashram that is rejected. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took sannyas. He didn't attempt to dismantle the Varnashram system. And although Krishna consciousness is meant for transcending the Varnashram system, but not artificially, one actually has to be on that platform. Otherwise, if one tries to act as if he's transcendental when he's not actually transcendental, then chaos will result in the life of the devotee who tries to do as such, and in the whole society, as was seen in the history of our Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya, when devotees in the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like to call themselves transcendental, they don't have to follow any rules, and so many anomalies came out of that, notably illicit sex in the name of Vaishnavism. All these things have to be understood very carefully. A very important lesson in the verse and the purport today that we're reading today. What is ego? What does it mean to be free from ego? We can't actually be fully free from ego at any stage. But freedom from egoism means freedom from the false egoism of considering I am a product of this world and I am better than others. A Vaishnav always cultivates humility. Uttam Hoya Vaishnav Hanir Abhiman. He's a Vaishnav, even the topmost devotee thinks he's very lowly. And it's easier to say than to actually feel like that. But we have to discuss it. And in this way, we can cultivate this sense that I'm not this body, I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, I'm the servant of everyone. Any question, please?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the lecture. It's not so much related to the topic, but you mentioned it a little bit, about the liberation. When you could please tell a little bit about the different kinds of liberation.
Different kinds of liberation. Well, the basic definition of liberation is muktir hit vanyata rupam swarupena vivasiti. That's actually very relevant in the discussion we had today. That the definition of liberation according to the Srimad Bhagavatam is to give up the present form that we have, or give up identification with that, and to be situated in one's real form, one's real position. Different kinds of liberation. Salokya, to live on the same planet as the Lord. Sarshti, to have the same opulences. Samipya, to live close to the Lord. And Sarupya, to have a form the same as that of the Lord. And Sayuja, merging into the existence of the Lord, which Vaishnavas don't like to accept. That's it in brief. That's just a definition. More discussion in the third canto of Bhagavatam.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the lecture. You talked also about cooperation. And also I see myself that I try to cooperate, but my heart is not really with it oftentimes. Maybe you can help me in this aspect.
Cooperation. Our heart's not in it. Our individualistic upbringing. It's a big, big topic to bring up at the end of a Bhagavatam class. Cooperation within Vaishnav society. We cooperate with the motive of pleasing Krishna. That my own personal motivation is subordinated to that of pleasing Krishna. Specifically, we who are under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada want to please Krishna by acting within Srila Prabhupada's mission to fulfill his desires. So with that understanding, we can begin to cooperate. Otherwise, it's a very big topic. Just cooperation, defined and understood in 2 minutes. You get books like that, right? The 1 minute manager. But it takes you more than a minute to read the book. It's nothing so quick and easy. You probably never heard of that book. They have all the every so often there's some new book which comes out, the great book that solves all the management. But there was the 1 minute manager, then something, the Pursuit of Excellence, or something like these are all famous management books. And then there was that the Seven Principles of Highly Effective People, and these are all the books that people read that's going to make them a great leader and manager, and the world goes on as chaotically as ever. Hare Krishna. Oh, there's one more question. No, maybe two.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Guru Maharaj, I'm translating for the Mataji, and she is asking how to destroy the fear of surrender.
We can destroy the fear of surrender by having full faith that if we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will look after us. Therefore, we have to imbibe the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. when the mother passes the baby to the grandmother, the child is no fear. But if she passes to an unknown person, there may be fear on the part of the baby, because the child has the implicit faith that I'm safe in these hands, then they feel perfectly comfortable. But if they're not sure, then they might start to cry. So that faith is developed by conviction, which comes from hearing and understanding and acting and seeing how Krishna helps us. There's another question.
Pass the mic.
I was wondering if you could explain more about the quality of being humble. I'm trying to understand if it's through the release of identification with our situations.
Yeah. Some things, quality, trying to understand the quality of being humble. We can try to understand it, but we just try to act it. And if we're just trying to understand it too much, it becomes on the mental platform. Just if we, and this much we have to understand. I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm meant to serve Krishna. And we deal with others on that platform. Being humble doesn't necessarily mean that we acquiesce to everything that everyone wants us to do, or that we don't react when someone misbehaves with us. That may be a factor in it. It's multifaceted. These kind of questions, we can get the answer or we can find the answer. Many times if we see someone who has a quality that we wish to imbibe, and we see how that person lives and behaves and acts, then that helps us to imbibe that quality. So if we see someone who has that quality, we can learn from their personality. Once Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was lecturing in Navadvip town, and his lectures were long. 2 hours was a short one. So he spoke elaborately on the nature of Kanishta Adhika, the lowest level of devotional service. Then at length on Madhyam Adhikara. And a few hours are gone. And he said, now to come to Uttama Adhikara, the topmost level. And he said, there's no need to speak on this. He said, you can just see the character of my Gurudev who lives here in Navadvip. Gaukishore Das, but just see his character, then you can understand what is Uttamadika. At that time, his head just turned as if automatically, and he saw leaving the assembly his Gurudev, Gaukishore Das Babaji, who he did not know had been present in the talk. That was his humility. There are so many examples we can read in Shastra here about the Madhavendra Puri, when he was given the kheer by the priest in Remuna in the middle of the night. I can't tell the whole story now, you have to see. But he immediately left that spot because he thought, when dawn comes and the priest will tell everyone and then everyone will be praising me. So he left. And he went on to Puri, and his reputation went ahead of him. But still he went, he would have avoided, but he had a service to do there. So even though everyone was praising him, he went on to Puri and did his service. Some things take some time to understand. It takes time to imbibe. Imbibe is a better word than understand. Imbibe a sense of humility. We can talk about it. It's a work in progress, we say. We have to talk about it, but actually to have that quality, it's we can pray also. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what is that? Sahishnuta Guna Hridaye Dhyan. He's praying by the mercy of the Holy Name to have all these qualities. It's a lot of work to do in Vaishnava. Chanting Hare Krishna is a lot of work. It's a lot of work. We're praying to Krishna, please make me your servant. It's a lot of work we have to do on ourselves. Hare Krishna, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.